I'm Jonathan Aberman. Coming up on today's show...
We've had people say, hey, is there a way that I can cut my pay to keep people on the team? We've had both contractors and government folks offer that because it feels like it's something special. And when you're in that, you know it won't be forever.
Welcome to What's Working in Washington on Federal News Network and streaming as a podcast.
This show is about making things happen in the nation's capital. Our guest today is somebody who's making things happen in the federal government in a really unique way. It's a story that I think needs to be told, so we're going to tell today. You're going to meet Justin Finelli. He's the Acting Chief Technology Officer of the Department of the Navy and also the Technical Director of PO Digital. For those of you that aren't government employees, that sounds like a lot. For those of you in the government, you'll know that's a big job. But the important thing is, this is a conversation with somebody who is entrepreneurial, wants to make a difference, and is making a difference here by executing real change with what he describes as a tribe. Here's our conversation. Justin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Good afternoon.
Well, you have, as is often the case to government, a long title. I'm just a dumb business guy. What do you do all day?
Well, there's an ampersand in the middle, if that helps. So the second one first, Technical Director for Department of Navy PEO Digital. So this is eight portfolios of Navy and Marine Corps information and technology that we are trying to get into our warfighters' hands and our users' hands. And so this is anything from cloud to infrastructure to cyber and a lot more. And so this is the acquisition, this is the delivery mechanism, the modern service delivery mechanism for the Department of Navy at scale for our hundreds and thousands of users.
So it could be something as minuscule as making sure that the smartphone that a sailor has the right apps on it?
That's in there. It's the platform right through there. Now, in terms of like the building of apps or configuring of apps, we have sibling PEOs that do that. And so PEO, Manpower Logistics Business, MLB, like baseball, is our partner in crime there. And so we're bottom of the stack, they're top of the stack.
So you're a distribution, right. in the commercial speak, you're a distribution. You're the distribution of the technologies, making sure it goes to the customer, except in this case, the customers are various people serving.
We are more highways than cars, absolutely there. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of connecting vendors and kind of like bottom of the stack all the way up, we're working with the commercial industry to say, hey, what is the best mechanism to provide this? And so luckily and fortunately, we have a good relationship with that other PEO and then several others to say, hey, are we harnessing the best buying power to do this correctly? So definitely distribution has been the way that we would think about that in the past. We are listening and adapting with the times to make sure that we're getting the latest and greatest out to these users. And I think we're doing that better than we ever had before.
Well, I want to learn more about that. But before we do talk about that, I believe that you haven't been a government employee your entire life. What's your career path been to get you to this point?
Like a lot of the people who I am fortunate enough to work with, I'm a dual citizen, as we say. So we've had a life in government and a life outside of government, and that's helped us to kind of learn both sides of the tracks and then maybe bring those tracks together. We always say that the world gets smaller when you're doing something right, and so we have the network from the outside, the network from the inside. So I was talking about the TD job, and that's specific to infrastructure, information, and technology. The CTO hat, also in those domains, but covers more ground, covers more of the tactical, covers more of the integrated activities and controlling and control loops, things like that. That domain is one that I'm fairly familiar with, had worked and advised companies outside of government on those, a few startups that have scaled, a few non-government investments where I was kind of an active participant in the growth of some of those companies, and then also teaching. And so teaching is where I met you for the first time, and when you were the dean and I was an adjunct professor. And so from a commercial perspective, I've done engineering. I've done some of the strategy work and consulting for companies. I've also done some of the execution. So a COO of a company that went from zero to one and a couple other things there. But I'd say that my larger passion has been in making things happen in government, both because we have the best mission imaginable. We're serving just awesome war fighters on a regular basis. We see the difference we're making, and there's just so much opportunity. And then that is the coolest part. It's also at times the most frustrating part, because there's so much more we can do, and we know it. And it sometimes feels like we're really, really close to the tipping point, or we're over the tipping point. And so we want that success to kind of iterate.
I have had people observe to me that we have a problem in our community, in that people in the 30 to 50-year-old range of career, just they're leaving more than they're coming. You're very much in the middle of our dominant industry. You seem to me to be a very ambitious, switched-on guy. What's your argument for why this is a career that ambitious people should choose to take as a path? A
couple things. One, service just hits different. I get goosebumps more when I'm working with the people I'm working with in government, knowing that what this collective mission is. And I think that goes for people who are directly in. I think this also goes for people who are supporting. So we, in government buildings, there are two different colors of badges, right? There's contractors. And they're all patriots. And so if people are helping in some way, shape, or form, and you know that your mission, your goal is to improve the defense of this country, that matters to us more than some other things. It's not close. Mm-hmm. And then the second piece is the tribe that we've built. And this is, I've been fortunate, not my whole career, but several times in my career, you've kind of have those people around you who make you better, and they want it more than you or as much as you. And it kind of rises tides, right? So raises tides. So I have some of the most dedicated people that I've ever seen. And I'll give you an example real quick. Mm. From a financial perspective, we know that there are some jobs that either the team or people adjacent can do and make a lot more money. Everyone knows that. There's one job in particular that we've had a little bit of trouble filling, because once you're trained in it, you can make three times more immediately. And so we had an exodus. We pulled some of those folks into the tribe, and now they're staying. We have offers that are kind of astronomical. We can't believe it. And in a couple cases that are kind of near and dear to me, we've had people say, hey, is there a way that I can cut my pay to keep people on the team? We've had both contractors and government folks offer that, because it feels like it's something special. And when you're in that, you know it won't be forever, but you want, it makes you want to give more.
It's fascinating. It's kind of what you're describing is what I would call best practices in startup land. You're creating a culture. So I don't think that many people outside of government think about government as having that kind of entrepreneurial culture. It's interesting to me. Why do you think that is?
It's a good question. I would like to say it's fully by design, but we let's go there. So from a values perspective, we have a couple enforcers on the team, and they are they're pretty hard and fast on you need all of these values to be on the team. And one of the biggest ones is you have to check your ego at the door, and we're going to evaluate that on a regular basis. And so it can be tricky if you don't know how you're being measured to get wins, but also watch that piece of it. And so what we're doing is we're noticing that the more the egos are in check, the more wins we get, the more that can snowball. And so that flywheel effect is something that we've seen in the kind of the recent term. And so as a result of that, the demand or the interest in the team has grown. So we opened a position we probably would have gotten a handful of resumes for. We got 50 resumes. That was after the cut. We did 8 interviews, and we have people who have applied to take a more than 50% pay cut to join this surge. So how are we doing it? I think people want to be part of something bigger. I think they want to commit to something that they can see the needle move on, and I think it's compelling.
A number of years ago, I asked a mentor of mine, Mike Daniels, who was has been for many years a leading light in the government contract industry here, and I asked him the difference between here and Silicon Valley. And he said, Jonathan, in Silicon Valley, people want to make money. In Washington, D.C., people want to make a difference. And I've often believed that's so, but you're describing something to me which I think is important. When we come back after the break, you've talked about culture, and I'm very pleased to talk about culture, but we should talk about innovation, because without innovation, we don't make things different. And you've had some success there recently, and I want to talk about that. We're here with Justin Finelli, the Acting Chief Technology Officer of the Department of the Navy and Technical Director for P Digital. We'll be right back. Has a mission, you know that. It's to make us all better informed and to promote DC as a place where we can build great careers and also the challenges we have to overcome. If you want to help, you can do the following things. First, send us your guest suggestions. If you think somebody's interesting, I'll think they're interesting too. Reach out to me through LinkedIn. I'll answer your email. The second thing is, if you like the show, subscribe. There's no better way for us to be able to keep doing this than have our audience grow. Or better yet, tell a friend. Invite a friend to subscribe, or just give us a like. It seems like such a simple thing, but you know, it actually makes a difference. So thanks for listening. Justin Finelli, he's the Acting Chief Technology Officer of the Department of the Navy and Technical Director for PEO Digital. Well, Justin, you've done a very good job of describing best practices for culture change and change management. What about innovation? How have you done? How have you been able to accomplish making some of the changes that you have to make in order to, you know, frankly, change the narrative?
Yeah, we're really excited right now. I actually can't remember being more excited in the last 25 years of what we're on the cusp of and then also what we've accomplished recently. To your point about culture, I don't know that we went in and said, hey, let's fix culture first and then innovate later. This was very much a parallel effort of we enjoy each other, but we want to win. And if we get feedback that says that we're not winning or that we failed someplace, that is useful feedback. And so what we did was we said, okay, we can make this happen in pockets. And I'll talk about that in a second. But about a year ago, we had a few different pilot teams. They were scattered. They were pretty personality dependent. And we said, this is good, but it has a natural ceiling. How do we institutionalize this? We want more pilots. We had three pilots. And we said, we want 10 times more pilots. We wanted to be really aggressive. Sometimes it's only about twice as much work to go 10x bigger, right? And so sometimes it's a lot more than that, but we had to learn by doing. And what we did was we went out and made the case. We said, here are things that are working. Here are things that we think are scalable. Here are things that we aren't, and we're starting today. And so as a result of that, we cast a pretty wide net for, hey, who are the best idea people and what are the best ideas? And so that was very decentralized. We knew that innovation at the edges were happening because we had been on ships and we had been at many of these sites. And some of the folks who are frontline Marines or sailors, they were talking about, here's how I'm making this work. Okay, well, that's a workaround. Have you thought about how to turn that into a scaling solution? I did, but no one would ever fund that. Oh, we're the people who might be able to fund that. And so we did a casting call for the best ideas for pilots. I thought we'd get 20. We got 151, and we found funding inside and outside for 20 of those. We didn't expect them all to make it. We weren't We'd be probably too conservative if we chose only ones that would make it. But of those 20, almost, actually more than half at this point, have transitioned to programs of record, as we say, or services of record. Some of them are small. Some of them are highly impactful. Some of them are, here's a way that on the back end we save it. But here's the point. And I don't want to over-index on process because this is about outcomes, but we've established a way to do innovation adoption and catching from the most creative people. Some of that is internal. A lot of that is external. But we've normalized the language and the mechanism for doing that, and we're just now seeing more people pop up with good ideas that we can make use of.
So let's talk about that in some greater detail, because I think that many look at government contracting, look at the industry of working with government, and look at the contracting rules, look at IDIQs, all different things that make it really hard for innovators, new companies that have a new approach to actually get in front of the government. So on one side, you're actually empowering the customer to tell you what they need. Mm-hmm. On the other side, you're telling me you're creating more of a storefront to engage with people. How are you managing to do that? Everything I'm hearing is that the system is designed to prevent that, just to be blunt. And that's what naysayers say. The system is designed to prevent that from happening.
There are a lot of assumptions that were true 20 years ago, and they were still true 10 years ago, and some of them are still true today. Mm-hmm. But if we're not revisiting assumptions and we have bad data, it's a little bit, if not outdated, boring. Mm-hmm. And so there are more mechanisms. We've gone, and by we, I mean the greater we, have gone to great pains to say, hey, what are alternative pathways? OTAs have come a long way. Software pathway acquisition activities have come a long way. Some of the training is trying to catch up. And so I think there are, in general, more avenues and opportunities than we make use of on a regular basis, right? Mm-hmm. And so what we've done is we've stacked, hey, here are the best 10 options. Most of these are Pareto. So 80% or more are going through 20% of the mechanisms. But what if there's a better fit? And so we've tried to do a little bit of almost like recycle bin sorting. This looks more like a plastic thing. Let's put it in this bin. Hey, we have some cardboard. We could throw this all together, but then we know it'll end up in a landfill. And so that sorting and matching, that pattern matching on what is the right mechanism and how can we bin those, again, we're doing some learning by doing. So we had some early stage assumptions where we said, okay, we're doing a lot of our contracting in-house. Well, Defense Innovation Unit is pretty special. Why don't we use them for more? Hey, the CBER program has good and bad things said about it, but it got renewed. Let's make use of that. Our CBER program office, our small business office, has been exceptional. And that has allowed us to kick off more things than we otherwise would. And then to your point about, hey, there's a lot of information out there, how much of it's good. In general, the internet has made so much derivative information. The authoritative source and then everything else on top of it can make this a really hard slog. And so we put out recently defensemarket.org and a couple other ways that can help with navigating. So you don't necessarily have to pay for just a general understanding of, hey, what is innovation? What is innovation theater? And then how do I get after it? This doesn't make product market fit perfect. It's not Legos. You still have to do the work. But we think that we've broken the valley of death into a handful of glens as opposed to one Grand Canyon that you have to just try and fly over.
And this may explain in part why Silicon Valley seems over the last couple of years to discover national security is a place where they should be doing startups then.
I think that's right. I think we are getting from all over the country a lot more new entrants. Part of that is I think the rise in just seeing the impact with everything that's happening in the world. And the rise in demand. And then I'd like to think it's because we're a better buyer and continuing to down that path. Dual use is something that we've leaned in on really hard. And it seems like from a public-private perspective, it's a win-win. And it's the only real limit there. The main one is how good we are at it and how effectively we can communicate. So we're trying to be clearer and more effective. And we're measuring that with data now.
How would you assess the DC technology startup community as a potential partner? Are you seeing as many interesting things here as elsewhere? Is there work that people here have to do to catch up?
It's a good question. I recently saw a set of stats that said there are more cyber folks in general in D.C. than anywhere else in the country, and it wasn't close. Mm-hmm. And so that's awesome. We do pay attention to those that are here. Certainly a lot of companies have a presence here, even if they're not started out of here. But we're pretty active on that scene, so attended DC startup and then headed to a couple other startups. I'll tell you this on that question. I was at South by Southwest and then in San Diego for an AI summit. And in both cases, DC held its own. And so we'll probably double down on that even further. I think there are some good ideas coming out of here. I think the connection between those and funding and where we look, it's coming from all around, but it's a good question.
Well, I'm a homer. I want to see things grow here, and yep. I'm beating the drum. I'd like to see more of it happening here. I know that another thing you're concerned about with respect to innovation is value for money. And you've written about this, the idea that in the commercial sector, there are ways you can figure out whether or not a product, a deployment actually makes sense. It's called better margins. You're trying to do that in the government, I think, too, right? And what metrics are you recommending that people use to figure out whether or not a technology is actually impactful in a government and national security perspective?
Yeah, it's pretty obvious who's winning and losing in industry, right? We have a pretty good handle on that. In government, it's often less obvious. The worst answer I've ever heard, and I haven't heard this for years, thankfully, but we don't have profit margins, so you can't tell how we're doing. And that was almost like a defense mechanism. Of course, we have ways that we can effectively measure what we're doing. And that's something that we've now benchmarked. And so we've used a framework called the Outcome-Driven Metrics Framework. And certainly within my PEO, my program executive office, we've taken that and we've said, okay, are we doing something that is 100% unique? No, of course not. There are unique aspects to military, and then there are aspects that we're making use of, like what commercial off the shelf and what a lot of people need. And so we went out to the C-suite of three of the hyperscalers and then some other world-class organizations outside of the government and inside the government and said, hey, we have some fundamentally common problems. How would you measure this, including operational resilience, including adaptability, and Ukraine-type stuff, including cost per user. And based on that, we've said, let's look at this and let's be competitive. Let's be world-class within the government. And let's hold our partners who want the same thing to be accountable on that. And so this is how we're doing a lot of the prioritization of our investment. It's opening up transparency, and we think we can double down on that.
How do you do that where there's all this pressure for I mean, the contracting process is designed to almost take those questions out of it, right? I mean, minimally acceptable product, minimum bid. You've got the specs, the program of record, all these different, there are all these things that seem to me that would take, it makes it hard to exercise this kind of judgment that you're describing. How do you finesse that?
Totally. And so I love that question because the short answer is we want to measure that, right? We want to know how we're doing. And so some contracts are more effective than others. Some mechanisms are more effective than others. We want that insight first, because if you're not collecting that insight, you can't do anything about it. So first and foremost, we're measuring and then adapting based on those measures. Will we hit the, ice to heat ratio of 16 minutes? Yeah, at some point. But there's a lot of room for improvement. We're seeing that, and the WAMs, as we call them, the world-class aligned climate metrics, apply as much to the delivery teams as the back office teams. And so we've had one team that did six effective contract actions in the same time as one did one. Those types of things allow us to drill in and say, maybe there's a best practice here. Maybe the circumstances were different. We have the data.
So how do I take what you've been doing, bottle it up, and infect another 1,000 people so they're other Justin Finellis? You have any ideas?
Yeah, I'm not special. The idea is that anytime you have people who really want to get after this, it's as much will as it is skill. And so we have great mentors. Gene Kim, who wrote the Phoenix Project, you, Arun Gupta, who just wrote Venture Meets Mission. Some of these folks from outside are level setting us and saying, here's how to think about this. The Atlantic Council recently put out a report called the Defense Commission on Innovation Adoption. And they said, we don't have an innovation problem. We have an innovation adoption problem. It was helpful to have that in writing. What we did from there was we said, here is the innovation adoption kit. You don't set a warfighter in the field without a kit. You don't send an innovator in the government without a kit. And so this kit breaks that valley of death into 15 glens and says, hey, we're happy to add more, but here are the plays that we can use. We're sharing that with folks now.
If I'm at a point in my career where I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, this sounds so amazingly interesting and cool. How does somebody go from where they are to sitting in your chair?
They made me stand, so I'm not even sitting right now.
I think
that's
well
actually
played,
that's part of it is like I think we're around people who love to work, and so the idea of just doing a little bit more than you should, the idea of connecting with groups that aren't necessarily intuitive groups because you are interested in people and interested in learning. Everyone on my team brings back things that we wouldn't expect just based on their job title because they're using that bridging capital, connecting dots. More innovation comes from weak ties than strong ties, and we make things happen. So how would you do it? Spend more time caring and being social with people who you're interested in.
Great advice. I really enjoyed having you on the show today, Justin. You're a perfect example to me of how entrepreneurship plays out in the dance floor of D.C. Congratulations on all your success. I look forward to watching you continue to make a difference. Folks, I was Acting Chief Technology Officer of the Department of the Navy and Technical Director for PO Digital, Justin Finnelli. Justin, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
This program is brought to you in partnership with George Mason University's Center for Regional Analysis. The CRA is the region's leading voice in economic data and forecasting. Check out their work at cra.gmu.edu. What's Working in Washington is a team effort. We have a great team. Tracy Madigan is our executive producer and editor. Laura Letendres is our digital producer. The theme music you've been listening to is performed by the Sunbathers. And thanks to all of you for joining us on What's Working in Washington.
You've been listening to What's Working in Washington on Federal News Network and streaming as a podcast.